As many of us are currently stuck in our homes right now and probably starting to feel a bit tired of it, if we're honest. I know it's starting to wear my family a bit thin. But I realized that the home is actually a really good metaphor for the heart and what God is trying to do in our hearts right now. Our homes are made up of many rooms. Some are really visible to people, like this room, like people can see it off the street. Some rooms are not visible, it's where you put stuff that you don't want anybody to see. Some rooms of our homes are used a lot, some are forgotten about. And our heart's actually a lot like that. When I talk about our heart, I mean like the central part of who we are, our driver. And we're really complicated people, we're complex people, and therefore our heart, what drives us, it's kind of like it's made up of many rooms and compartments and domains. So if you look around at your home right now, imagine if it is a representation of the state of your heart as we speak. Maybe there are rooms in your home that are really polished and clean and perfect, or at least made to look that way. Perhaps that's what your heart is like right now, or part of your heart. It's just nothing that you're struggling with. That's fine. Or maybe there are rooms in your home that, if it's anything like our home, honestly look like it's been ransacked by children, really. Maybe there are parts of your heart that are like that right now, whether you want to admit it or not. Unclean, maybe from harbored sin over time, or not making Jesus a priority in your heart, or just prioritizing idols above God, whatever it is. Maybe that's what your heart feels like. But some of us in our homes have like basements, like underground rooms. I know we've got one, I'll show you. It's just here. It's mind the chicken. That's a joke, Lacey's gonna kill me for that, but I thought it'd be funny. Sit down here. So this is the like underground basement part of our house. This is where we put stuff that we don't want anybody to see. We tuck it away, forget that it's there. And maybe you got parts of your heart that are like that, that kind of function as basements. You just suppress stuff, whether it's sin or idolatry or hurtful memories, you suppress it there and you just want to forget about it. I know I've got stuff in my heart that I don't want people to know about. I don't even want God to know about it. But He wants to bring it up and clean it out and heal it. That's His desire for us. That reminds me of a passage in Revelation chapter 3, where Jesus is talking to Christians and He's saying, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice, opens the door, I will come in and eat with you and you with me." That's Jesus saying, "Hello, Christians, I'm standing at the door of your heart and you think you've given me access to you, but you haven't. I'm knocking." And that imagery of Jesus coming in and feasting with you, that's like the feast of communion and union with Jesus in the inner parts of who we are. But for most of us, Jesus is knocking. He's out in the street. He hasn't even been given access into you because you haven't allowed Him to. You haven't surrendered. The other night, Lacey and I, we decided to pray over our home. And that's actually a pretty good thing to do, particularly now. We wanted to pray over our home because pretty much our kids have been manic. And we wanted to pray that God would have full access to this place and that He would cover us with His love and power and that He would rid us of anything that isn't of Him, that anything that the enemy might be trying to do, like causing anxiety, particularly in our children. So apart from that being a good thing to do right now, the point is we should be praying a similar prayer over our own lives, over our hearts. Our prayer should be, move in God, rid me of this lie that I'm in control of my own life. Rid me of this idea that I'm the king over my own kingdom. Take down strongholds that the enemy might have been putting into those deep forgotten places of my heart over maybe plenty of years. Topple those strongholds. Clean out all the idols that have built up in my life. Take residence in me, oh God. That should be our prayer right now. And as we speak right now, as in like April, May, June, however long this is going to go on for, right now we have such a wonderful and unique opportunity to actually take leaps and bounds in this area and allow God to actually have access in our lives. Okay? Now here's why. I've been reading a book by an author called Henry Nouwen. Now he was a really incredible Christian spiritual thinker and guru. And he wrote a book called The Way of the Heart. And in that book, he writes about the desert fathers and mothers. Now, they were a group of Christians who lived in Egypt in the 4th and 5th centuries. And they really wanted the same thing. They wanted God to have supreme access over their hearts, over their lives, kind of like Brother Lawrence did, who we talked about last week. And they were driven by these few verses in the New Testament. Romans 12:2, don't conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's perfect will is. And Galatians 2:20, I have been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. So fueled by those couple of verses, they left their society and they went into the Egyptian desert. And they spent large stretches of time there by themselves. It was really solitude. We might call it extreme social distancing. And there's a parallel between them and us. COVID, Corona has, we didn't choose it, but it's forced us into this type of solitude. Obviously not the same, we're not in the desert or anything, but it's a type of solitude. We are distanced from other people, and that can be an incredible environment for spiritual growth to happen in an accelerated way. And you might be thinking, well, I've got kids like crawling all over me, like I'm less alone than I was before. And sure. But not everybody's in that boat. A lot of people are really alone and in that place of solitude and withdrawn and really need to know what to do with that for their spiritual development. But for those of us with kids, like myself, sure, that's right, but still, we're still being forced into this space of solitude. We're more distant from people than we were before, distance from things that we used to do and distract us. So we just need to be a bit more creative. What are we going to do in this type of solitude in terms of allowing God access into our hearts? And so what happened to these desert fathers and mothers when they went into this time of solitude? God moved in to their heart. That's what happened. God fully moved in. And when they re-emerged out from the desert, what were they, like weirdos? Were people like, oh man, there are those freaky people who've been living in the desert for years. Like, let's not go near them. Let's avoid them. No, that's not what happened at all. It was the opposite. People flocked to them. People just wanted to be in their presence because they felt that they were being ministered to by them. And it's because they were completely different. it wasn't they who lived, but Christ who lived in them, like for real. And they write about having these extended, decade-long periods of potent, compassionate ministry. They were completely transformed in the solitude. So what happened to them? What happened to them in the desert, in the solitude? They describe it as being like a furnace of transformation. A furnace, that's not comfortable. That's hot. Furnaces are hot. And that's what it was like for them. They describe these two dynamics that took place for them in the desert. The struggle and the encounter. The struggle, the encounter over and over again. That's what it was like as they were trying to invite God into their heart. So the struggle, if you can picture them right now, like all by themselves in the desert. And we're going to talk about what this means for us practically in a moment. But just picture them in the desert. And they described it as, it's like God was bringing up their hidden demons suddenly. All the things that they'd been pushing down and suppressing for so long, it was all coming up, and it was a spiritual battle. It's like when Jesus went to the wilderness, battled Satan. That's what it was like for them. And so think about, like, perhaps you have past traumatic memories that you've been suppressing for a long time. Like if you spend time in solitude with God for real, you're going to feel that struggle, and that stuff's going to come up and God's going to deal with it. Perhaps there are sins that you've been harboring or private addictions and you've been lying to people about it. That's going to come up and God's going to deal with it. Perhaps you've been harboring bitterness and hatred towards somebody for heaps long and it's become so normal. That'll come up in the struggle and God will deal with it. And it is painful. Think about scriptural examples of this happening to people, like Jacob, who literally wrestled with God in the desert. It was a struggle. Elijah went through all these traumatic emotional experiences, battling with God, and because it's the space where you're letting go of your control and all those superficial things that you put on Instagram and Facebook, all that stuff just gets obliterated in the presence of a holy God. That's the struggle. But then comes the encounter, and that is where you hear God's whisper. You actually hear him speak. It's where God prevails over those hidden demons, over the enemy. He prevails. And every time you get to have that sweet encounter where you taste and see that the Lord really is good and he's real and he has your best interests at heart, every time that happens, it's like Jesus gains a little bit more access into the rooms of your heart. He gains access into places that he didn't have access to before. And there he rules. And the more these encounters happen, the more rooms he takes over in your heart. And it's like living water. It's healing. The struggle and the encounter. That's what happened to these desert fathers and mothers. So what does that mean for us? If we are in this forced space of solitude, what does that look like? Well, I'm just going to share a bit from my experience really quickly. You know, it's hard for me to get into a place of really being alone with God and wanting to just enter into that struggle and encounter. So I have to kind of prime myself. I need a lot of priming, to be honest. So one of the things that I do is I take a lot of inspiration from practitioners, from people who I know who have written and actually practiced this life of solitude and spiritual growth out in their lives. Henry Nouwen, who I've already talked about, he was an incredible practitioner all of his life. He practiced these disciplines of solitude and spiritual growth. his book, The Way of the Heart, talking about the desert fathers and mothers. That's a short book that you can read. That really helps me to get primed to enter into the struggle with God. Dallas Willard has a book called Hearing God, perfect to listen to or read right now. I listen to a lot of these on Audible. Richard Foster has a book on prayer, and he also has this book, A Celebration of Discipline, that talks about solitude and silence and disciplines like that. James Brian Smith has a podcast that I've been listening to called The Things Above podcast, which is just like 15-minute devotionals focused on Colossians 3, talking about setting your heart and mind on things above. You might want to write some of these down as well, because I'm just spurting them out to you. There's a book by a French missiologist who lives in Brazil. His name is David Brazil, and he wrote this book that I've had for a few years called Pray Like a Gourmet. And it really, like, it's pretty much him writing about creative and practical ways that you can enter into these deep times of prayer and union with God. But it's like made to actually help you to understand how to do it around the home. So it's perfect for right now. It's awesome. And there are other classics like A.W. Tozer, The Pursuit of God, The Holiness of God. All these works and people writing inspires me personally. It might not be your thing, but that inspires me. It primes me. And I take what they've learned and I implement it into my own life in these times of solitude. And then to kind of further enter into this connection with God and inviting God into my heart, I just try to apply these simple, short prayers prayed unceasingly. So you don't have to be like all theological about your prayers or highly intellectualize it all. I don't think that's the space for this. I think you can use simple, short statements like, Lord, have mercy. And you just repeat it over and over. Lord, have mercy. Lord, have mercy. Lord, have mercy. Lord, have mercy. Or you might use a statement like, the Lord is my shepherd. 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 And the more you say it, suddenly those just stop being words and you actually grasp hold on it. And the desert fathers and mothers talk about how the repetition of those simple lines about God, it's like they start descending a ladder into your heart. The Lord is my shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd. And they start to take root there. And the Spirit brings them to life in you and makes it so real. And that's how Jesus starts to take residence in your heart through those statements. Like, it's actually incredible. It's incredible. So simple, short prayers. You can pray it wherever you are, whatever you're doing. I've actually been doing a really odd thing. This is going to sound very odd. But I have been looking up scenic train ride journeys on YouTube. And pretty much you can find some of the most beautiful scenic train journeys in the world on YouTube. Like, they set up a driver cam, so you just watch the entire footage of a 2-hour or 3-hour journey. My favorite one is from Switzerland to Italy, from St. Moritz to Torino. And you go past crystal lakes and pine forests and snow-capped mountains. I've actually got it playing on the TV right now. Just so happened to be playing that. And I've actually been using it as a type of meditation, been speaking these prayers, these simple prayers, over and over while watching the clips of the train journeys. And it's like a metaphor for Jesus' words descending into my heart. I know there's going to be people who are going to do that after this message, so I'll put the link in the chat for you to look at that. But, you know, at this point, I'm kind of primed I'm starting to enter into union with God, but it's my belief that you can't fully enter into this furnace of transformation of solitude unless you are alone with God. You've got to get alone with Him. All right? All this other stuff is kind of just talking about it, but you've got to do it at one point. It's like if you watch bees, you know, their job is to get nectar from flowers, right? But they don't get nectar from just flying around the flower. They get the nectar by landing on the flower and actually doing it. And that's what it's like for us. We can't just talk about it, can't just fly around it. We've got to land in God and do it. So my encouragement to you is make this happen. Get alone with God. I have kids. I can't really do this during the day. I can't. But I got to make it happen. It's so important. So I wait till they go to bed and I find a space where I can be alone at like 10 at night and go for an hour or 2 hours, however long it takes to enter into this struggle and encounter with God. It's the most important thing you can do with your life. Or get up at 4 a.m. and do it there. I was going to like actually film myself doing that, but I thought that was weird. Because I realized, actually, it's really private. Your times with God, you don't readily share that with anyone, really. It's holy. These are holy moments between you and your Maker, between you and the Spirit taking residence into your heart. That's what you got to do. Make it happen. And this is the struggle and the encounter dynamic, the furnace of transformation. And for these desert fathers and mothers, they went through all this and they knew that it was time to leave their place of solitude when they realized, oh, Jesus shouldn't just take residence in me. It's got to be so much more than that. I've got to give Him the keys. Like if you've ever had somebody stay over at your home, like, you know, they can take a room and they might stay there overnight or for a couple of weeks maybe. But it's not like you're giving them the keys to your house or anything. They don't have ownership over your home. They're just staying, they're visiting. But that's not how it happens with Jesus. It can't happen like that. He's not just wanting to fill up some rooms of your heart. He's not just visiting. You got to hand Him over the rights to your life. Hand Him over the keys. Your heart's no longer yours anymore. That's what it means for Christ to fully live in you, for you to be crucified with Him. Once the desert fathers and mothers realized that, they knew it was time to leave. Man, I hope we can get to that place. Jesus needs to own me. He needs to take possession of me. And like I said, these early Christians, they emerged with this incredible fullness of God and entered into these decade-long compassionate ministries that blessed so many people. They said that it was like they just didn't judge anyone anymore because they'd become so aware of their own weaknesses while they were in the desert. They didn't judge anyone and they didn't compare themselves to anyone else anymore. They were just full of God's love and mercy. I mean, if that's not what the church is meant to be, then I don't know what is. So here's the thing. What would happen if we took this forced time of solitude right now so seriously that we all went and entered into the struggle? We said, I know you're knocking, Jesus, enter into me, take over me completely. And then we kind of just start bursting out into society with this radical compassionate ministry. Like I know people like Louise Woods, like coming up with ideas of sitting on a hill, people connecting as a prayer partner with the elderly people of our congregation. Like imagine if we start coming up with these wonderful compassionate ideas because we're just so full of Christ. And imagine if when this whole lockdown is finished, we re-emerge as a group of Christians together, like the desert fathers and mothers, out of the desert of social distancing as a different breed of people that people just want to flock to because it's Christ in us. Imagine us not judging anyone or comparing ourselves to anyone anymore. It's God alone who matters. He's in us and he's all around us. And it's possible. Let's not miss the opportunity that we have. It's right in front of us. Jesus is knocking. Behold, I stand at the door of your heart and I knock, Christian. I'm knocking. You're going to leave me out in the street? Or you're going to allow me to just take parts of you? Or are you going to allow me to take full possession of your life for once and clean everything else out? That's so painful. That's such a struggle. But we live for the encounter with Jesus. I want that. I'm gonna try with God's help to dedicate myself to this while we're in this space of solitude. And will you join me? Will you join me? God's inviting us into this space. Let's answer him. Let's take this seriously. And right now we're going to sing in worship. Jazz is going to lead us. And what if right now you just find a space, get alone if you can, where you are, and start to just pray these simple repeated prayers. Allow God to descend into your heart. Be real with him. Be vulnerable with him. Let him take over. Why don't we start that now as we worship together? But it doesn't end there, it continues. Amen.